Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590 Fan. I'm Jake Bunkus. Halo Sport Bar, Blake Murphy. Not as much fanfare for me being at the game yesterday as there was for our next guest. Whether or not that's right, that's for you to decide. Dwayne De Rosario, former forward, captain, Canadian men's national soccer team, and now the second leading goal scorer in program history, something I'm sure he's fine with. What's up, D-Row? How you doing, man?
Good morning. I'm fantastic.
Yeah.
Thank you. How are you?
Ah, man, I'm fantastic, too. I was down at that game. It was incredible. I sweated out. It was nerve-wracking. It was sickening at times. I thought for sure that we were going to end up, you know, blowing it, but Canada takes care of their opportunities. I just want to start with this, man. Seeing them beat the States, you know, like beating America, as great as this run has been, beating the States at home, how that felt different from the other wins on this run.
Well, everyone knows there's no secret between the rivalry that we have with the U.S. So watching Canada beat the U.S. at home in front of our fans was amazing to watch. You know, you've seen the excitement, you've seen the joy. It's definitely a proud moment for Canada, and I'm ever so proud for them.
Yeah. What did you think of the crowd, too? Because, first of all, it looked like more than 12,000 of us got in there, you know what I'm saying? Like, it felt like maybe a little bit. But I couldn't tell if there were people sneaking in, there was extra people in the building, or if it was just that everybody was so into it and so in love with this team that it just felt like there were more people.
Yeah, I mean, they're not to love. I mean, it was an exciting game. It was an exciting win for us. And, you know, in terms of the attendance, yes, we all know that there has been some restrictions. Navigating around that, I know Canada Soccer has tried their best to work within those guidelines. But, you know, it felt like a packed stadium. You know, it felt like, you know, every single person there, you know, expressed their passion for this team and their support for this team. And like I said, it was really, I think, a turning point for Canada Soccer.
Dwayne, coming into this one, we mentioned off the top, obviously, Kyle Larin passing you on the all-time goal-scoring list. There had been some, maybe not doubt, but questions about whether Kyle and Jonathan David could find a synergy together. Obviously, that's been a very successful duo for Canada in this window. What has worked for those two guys playing together so far?
Well, you know, the relationship, that they're the trust between each other, the understanding that is growing between each other. You know, it's not easy when you're, you know, playing in different countries, a different style, a different system of play. And you have to come and you have a short window to try to, you know, connect with a player you haven't connected with in months. But they're starting to have that understanding. We saw that in the first goal. And but, you know, obviously a great flick from Osorio as well to lead to that goal. But, you know, it's that trust and that understanding, right? They're both comfortable saying, you know what, I'm going to look for you and vice versa. And I think that partnership is a very, very positive thing for us to have moving forward.
So Kyle Larin passes you on the goal scoring list in program history. But, you know, when we look back at what you've done in terms of inspiring a generation, it probably feels, as we said, a little bittersweet that you have kind of been the face and now you're passing on the torch. What does it feel like when that happens? And how much, you know, you deserve a lot of praise yourself for being kind of the face that's probably inspired a lot of generations to come.
Yeah. And I appreciate that. Thank you for your sentiments, but you know, I did what I did to achieve what these kids are achieving now, what this new generation's achieving now, all of our sacrifices. We wanted this. We've seen that we have the potential to do what they're doing. They're getting the support. They have the platform. You know, soccer is at a different state in Canada with you know, obviously MLS and their contributions to our success, CPL now. So the growth is real, and we're starting to see the impact of that growth. You know, these kids are growing up in professional academies. They're getting to train on the same field as professional players, so their attitude toward and their approach towards the game is a lot different, and I think we're really starting to see that with this new generation coming up. And it's, like I said, it's refreshing, it's fantastic to see, and that's something I always wanted to showcase, highlight, and achieve within my play and represent Canada and say, hey, you know what, there's more D-Rose back there. you know, and now the world is seeing it.
Well, there was also, the buy-in with the program just seems so different now. And it feels like it just happened sort of overnight where now guys want to be playing for the national program. Now there's just like, I guess I can't speak to the teams that you played on as much because this one has just been so public, but it really does feel like the vibe around has changed so much. And I wonder, with you being up close and personal with it, what you think is different just with Canada soccer now versus Canada soccer even 5 years ago?
Opportunities. It's all about the opportunities. The opportunities that the kids have now is far, far beyond the opportunities that we had growing up, right? We didn't have the professional structures and the professional environments in place, like I said, where we can go into an academy, professional environment, structured environment, and, you know, feel a part of, like, you know what, hey, if I work hard, I can play for TFC or Montreal Impact or Vancouver Whitecaps. And then who knows, maybe I can make the national team, right? We didn't have those experience in those platforms. So these platforms are, you know, and I mentioned the CPL, you know, another environment where kids are like, you know, hey, if I do well here, TFC could pick me up, or, you know, you never know what could happen. So I think these avenues and these pathways of opportunities is the biggest, positive impact that I think the kids have really grasped.
So I want to actually just like focus back now on the game itself. So actually I'll start with this. Even for the sport, that Team USA, like, they bitch a lot, huh? Like, that's a really complainy team, right? Like, just a bit, like, that's a pretty, like, just a, like, that's a Pulisic, like, I gotta say, that was a lot of crying throughout that game. That's an annoying team. It felt especially good to beat a team when they're constantly complaining and constantly going over the officials and their coach is having to cry. Like, just admit it. Just say it. It's their crybaby team. That's a crybaby team.
Listen, we've always felt that way as Canadians, you know? You know, they always get the nice stuff. They always get the special treatment. They're always complaining. And while we're constantly fighting over hurdles and boundaries to get to what they get. But, yeah, they're a complaining team, and I'm glad that we beat them.
So, Dwayne, looking ahead to these last four games, what is the mental approach in terms of, hey, you've been having all the success, you're undefeated, you want to keep winning games, obviously, but we're going to start getting to the point of qualifying where there are clinching scenarios that we're aware of, and maybe you only need a 1 point here, or 1-0 is more important than 3-1. Are these guys still going to be approaching every game as a let's win it, or do you start to look at the table more intently down the stretch here?
You have to be critical with every game, right? And that's the journey and the process of qualifying for World Cup. So you got to be very calculated on that approach. I think Herdsman have done a great job. As you see, you know, Tiva didn't play, other players didn't play, they rested them. So there's constantly tactical approaches to every game and every situation that presents itself. And I think he's done a good job of calculating that and finding the right recipe that no matter who he puts in there, we're still going to have the same approach. That if we can win, we will win. If not, let's find a way to get out here with a point. And why change now what has worked for up to this point, right?
Yeah, don't change what's working. You know what's working? Right. Milan Borjan, who is just
unbelievable.
Every single game, there's just a monster save. I love this dude because he's got this, first of all, the outfit, the kit is incredible. The dad going for a jog move. It's just, I love the look. It's great. He loves the camera, right? He's like, I'll milk it. I'll use some time. Give me a little camera. He plays to the crowd. He comes up with big saves. What do you think it does for that team right now, knowing that guy is just on the heater he's on, the way that he's playing behind them?
Yeah, you know, Milan definitely is one of the key backbones to this team. I've been fortunate to play with him on the national team, and you know, he has the experience, right? He knows how, like you said, milk the clock. He knows how to deflate the game. He knows how to get the fans involved. He knows how to read the pulse of the situation and act accordingly. You know, we've seen him sometimes go down and take time off the clock because, you know, they're under pressure. And so all these little decisions that he's making is impactful in a positive way for our team. And I think the young guys are understanding that. I know Herdsman has given him a leadership role on the team, and I think the guys respond to him well. And you know, he's coming up with big saves right now. There's not a weak link on our team, and that's amazing to say.
I just love the way he talks back there, the way that he communicates with the team. He's barking. I do love the clock milking. Like, I love the diving on the ball, you know, the holding it, just laying on the turf, just waiting the waves to the fans. I'm just a big fan. I think that this guy, if we're doing like a stock up watch in terms of a guy who has gone from a relative unknown to just an absolute star in this country, he is absolutely at the very top of the pile. So I do also want to get back to kind of the depth of this program, because that game against the States, they're putting an all-in push at one point, right? And they're dominating possession numbers, and they're doing these things. And I'm trying to think to myself, okay, well, how different is this game if they have Davies? How different is this game if Canada doesn't hold the lead, you know, 7 minutes into the contest? What do you think we learned from that match? Like, if we're trying to take something moving forward of, hey, this is the best competition Canada's played so far. This is a big money matchup where, yes, they played an opponent that gave them their best punch. They didn't have their star player. What are you taking away from it more than anything in terms of trying to apply it to Team Canada's roster moving forward, or their play moving forward?
You know, it's just going to continue to boost our confidence that we have within our team, our self-belief that, hey, you know what, we can do this. Let's not forget, we've easily handled two of CONCACAF's top teams, you know, in Mexico. You know, tie Mexico away, beat them at home. And the same thing with the U.S., right? So we've proven now to everyone that it can be done. We can now, we don't have to sit back. We don't have to absorb pressure anymore. We can take the game to them. We can beat them on the counterattack. We can beat them in possession. We can, you know, we can beat them in strength and physicality. And that kind of confidence, you can't beat that. You can't beat that. And with every game, you can see a team that's enjoying each other a lot more. They're putting a lot more trust in each other. Guys that are coming off the bench know they have a duty and a responsibility, and it seems like every guy that comes in just wants to continue to prove that they belong as well. So we have the right recipe for success, and I think that win yesterday against the U.S. was a staple and a major statement of Canada soccer and the direction and the growth where we're going.
Buddy, how many did you go out and have in celebration with the team?
That's why I couldn't remember.
I know you're like, what day was that? Did you just wake up?
You caught me.
Dwayne Dumazar.
I'll tell you what, because, you know, when you watch, you know, Sam in that last goal, like, you know, it's a defending player, right? And he's making a run.
Yes.
In maybe at a time where if you look back, we would hold, you know, and guys be sitting back and absorbing crosses, absorbing balls in the air, absorbing shots against crosses, set pieces. We're taking risk at the right time, and we're like, go for it. And the end result, I mean, what a finish, right? What a finish. And I'm so proud of, again, a player that, you know, hasn't really got a lot of attention besides maybe jumping in the snow. But, you know, fantastic player. I mean, Kamal Miller stepping in, you know, and doing, you know, locking down the defense. I mean, I could go on and on, you know, about how proud I am about this group.
Yeah, I love hearing it in your voice, man. Like, I love hearing how excited you are by this team, because that's how we all feel about it, right? And people that are new to this, or people that have been around for this for a while now, there is this genuine enthusiasm. And yeah, hearing it from somebody like you, I do think it is very important, right? Like, that the people that are directly involved in it understand the moment and understand the feeling and are able to, yeah, just, I think that there's a real synergy right now with the fan base, with the team, with the coaching, everybody. I do want to talk, though, just because you brought him up. And again, I'm a layman. I'm watching this game as a fan. I'm watching this. But, like, Adekubi, who scores the big goal at the end, I thought that was so awesome for him, because I thought he played a really good game. And I wonder if you could just touch on a little bit of the defending that this group had, because the States had the ball a lot, and yet I thought Canada did a pretty damn good job of limiting the opportunities they actually got on goal.
Well, I mean, for sure. I mean, besides the header and the very creative, you know, the chest and the bicycle kick, there wasn't really much after that. you know. And again, we're talking about CONCACAF elite, right? We're not talking about, you know, oh, it's the U.S. and it's just a rivalry. You know, like this, you know, we have to give credit where credit's due. U.S. team is not a joke team. I mean, yes, they've struggled. We saw them in recent qualifiers. They struggled to qualify. But, you know, U.S. is a staple in CONCACAF qualifying. Like, you expect Mexico, you expect USA to always be on top. But now you're seeing Canada, right? And it's not so much, you know, winning. My dad would say it's not winning. It's how you win. Right, and the way we're winning, and the style that we're winning at, and as you mentioned, the defensive side, we're limiting, you know, their chances. We're playing against a team like Mexico, who's very creative and dynamic going forward, and these guys can't find ways to break us down. And it's testament to the commitment from our defense, and not only our defense, our entire team. You know, you've seen opportunities where, you know, you see Kyle Larin back there working and defending. You're seeing Jonathan Davies there defending. Then you see Sam Adekube on the top scoring. And then, you know, so it's very, like, everybody's committed to the cause. And that's a hard team to beat when everyone's committed.
Yeah, again, it really does feel like that there's just buy-in from everybody. Dude, this was so fun. I loved hearing the energy that you have this morning, despite the million beers that you probably put in your body yesterday after that win. Go take a nap. Go enjoy the rest of your hangover. I don't know what your hangover routine is, but I'll let you get back to it. Thanks for taking a break and joining us, man.
Always a pleasure, guys.
Cheers. Dwayne DeRosario. So you guys are back now.
We do still work here. Yes, yeah, we are still on the show, but we both got kicked off of the server, so it took us a little while to reconnect. It's okay. It was a JD Bunkus show with JD Bunkus and JD Bunkus. Proud of you.
No, that's okay.
You held it down for us.
Thank you. We don't know that, Ailish. We couldn't hear it.
Actually, we have no idea what he was saying. He could have been like, "My coworkers suck. I kicked them off the show."
Yeah. I did. I thought about it.
Well, we're
back. That was great. What you may have missed is a guy who is as excited as fans are for what's happening with this program right now. And it's not like Canada soccer is the Golden State Warriors, where they can be jaded by success right now. So obviously there is a natural new enthusiasm around the program. But maybe it is because we cover professional sports so much, and there has become more of a professionalization where athletes make so much money, and there isn't that same sort of passion and excitement around as there is with international competition, and especially for a newer program like Canada Soccer. I mean newer in terms of newer success. But, yeah, there is just something refreshing about this team right now that is, it's reinvigorating. It's exciting. It's a shot in the arm for what we're doing with coverage right now. It feels very, very different. And having the athletes reflect that. I know Dwayne's not playing on the team right now, but it's Dwayne DeRosario. He's intrinsically tied with Canada Soccer. That it really adds to it for me. It really does.
It's the term Pat Riley used to use all the time, and I've used this for other teams as well. It's the innocent climb, right? And that's not to say it's easy, or not to say there isn't immense pressure on the guys on that pitch, and anxiety as a fan too, right? Like, look, Canada basketball is supposed to have been on that innocent climb on the men's side for two decades now, and they're stuck on the first rung still. And there are so many parallels, I think, between Canada soccer and Canada basketball, where you see this first wave of players breaking through, and then you see, hey, the women's program is ahead of the men's program on both sides and starting to see international success. And now you're seeing, you know, we hope with the men's basketball team next Olympic cycle and this men's soccer team this Olympic cycle. And it's really easy to get excited, not only because there are these huge, meaningful games for us to enjoy and for fans who are maybe new to the sport to have these touch points with the sport where they'll become bigger fans, and they'll, you know, maybe the next kid wants to play. But the more success you have at the international level as well, the more money there is, the more sponsorship, the more infrastructure you can build to keep that rolling. So, you know, when we talked to Steph LeBay a couple weeks ago about what's next for this program on the women's side, that's where they were at. It's the, okay, let's get some domestic options for players. Let's start to build that side of it so we can keep this going and not, you know, Canada on the women's side, it won't be a fun up-and-comer story. You'll be a powerhouse, and the narrative will change. That's what you eventually want on the men's side, too. And we're several steps away from that. But getting to the World Cup for the second time ever and the first time since literally the year my old ass was born is huge. And like,
yeah.
It is, look, it's not, I'm not the center of the universe, but when my mom is texting me talking about soccer, asking, like, my mom doesn't like sports at all. And she's like, why is everyone so excited about the soccer? Oh, that's so fun. Like, mm-hmm. This is a moment for Canada soccer on the men's side. And obviously the fact that it's building off this awesome success on the women's side, I don't know, man, real momentum here, it feels like.
Yeah. And I know you're not the center of the universe because I am. And I telling a friend yesterday that I was going to the Canada soccer game instead of watching championship football is in – this is to a friend that I call every single Sunday before the games to talk football with, where we've had zero relationship with a soccer going dating back to college. And it was kind of a no-brainer. It was a kind of a no-brainer to go to that game. That's where momentum is at in terms of turning people into fans of this sport in this country. I'm very excited for them. I'm very excited for everybody that's involved in it. I'm actually really excited for the day one diehards. Like, the people who have been supporting this program through the lulls and who have been here and have had to go to some of these games, I'm sure, where Canada's gotten their teeth kicked in by the United States. And I know that's why it doesn't matter if you care about bandwagon fans, and I'm enjoying part of this too, is that it doesn't really feel that way with Canada Soccer. It's a very welcoming tent for, hey, you want to be a part of this? You want to join this? Join. It isn't like other sports where there's that kind of conversation about bandwagonerness, but boy, it feels cool just watching that intense supporters section, those day one supporters, get a moment like that. Also, feels great beating the front runner bitchy team that cries. Just saying.
Did you
front runners?
I saw some stuff online where I think it was the coach or someone like in the organization was complaining about the size of the width of the field. Like, oh, it was a different width. Like, just shut up.
What's crazy to me is that it's the first soccer game I've ever seen where the U.S. plays on one pitch and Canada plays on a different, better pitch.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that they were playing on different surfaces.
It might be the metric to whatever the other type of measurement is, the you know, imperial. Maybe they're just confused.
I don't know. All I know is that I've never seen anybody in any sport cry as much as Pulisic all game long. Cry, nonstop cry, bitch at refs, cry some more, dive, then cry, then cry, then dive. Yeah, it was great beating that team. So good beating a team of front runner babies. Mwah.
Canada
soccer.
Front runner babies is a great term. We'll have to work that into baby. You know what it is? We'll have
front
to.
Runner babies.
We've got Ailish's baby Friday on Thursday. The next time there's a long weekend and there's a Friday off, we'll call that front runner baby Friday.
Yeah, front runner baby. Either way, that was great, and that was great getting to talk to D-Row too.
Yeah, he's awesome. That excitement, just I mean, between that and the Davies watching the goal.
That was awesome
video from the game prior. So
I'd like to see Davies play soccer though. Now moving, you know, I like seeing the Davies videos, and I even shared one on Instagram, and I'm into it. I love how excited he is for his teammates, how much he loves them. Again, after our fear a month and a half or 2 months ago that this guy might be having a fractured relationship with the program based off of a tweet. That's how insecure we are as sports fans in this country, but. I would like to see him play now. I hope he gets back healthy. I don't want to go to any more Canada soccer games, no Davies. I'm ready for a Davies game. That's my next bucket list item.
Yeah, the Davies game, maybe next window. To close out this window, Canada's got El Salvador on Wednesday. We've got the game on Sportsnet 1, 8:30. I believe start time is 9 p.m., but the broadcast starts at 8:30. Another big one. Another 3 points would give Canada a really good position in that table for qualifying ahead of the final window in late March. So stay tuned for that. We'll tee that up on Wednesday as well. So we've got that coming for you. We've also got Craig Simpson coming for you. I'm going to talk to the former NHL forward and sports color analyst about your Toronto Maple Leafs. They've got the New Jersey Devils for a back-to-back tonight and tomorrow. That's next on the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.
It's the Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan. Ailish Forfar, J.D. Bunkus, Blake Murphy. And one exciting Toronto Maple Leafs game after another, it seems. Craig Simpson, former NHL forward, two-time Stanley Cup champion, and current Sportsnet color analyst. What did you take of Bunting having that moment on his hockey day in your hometown, a hat trick? Do you know of any other, you know, games that you've covered or been around that have been as good of a storyline, like a scripted from, you know, the gods?
Well, I've been around some pretty incredible players that have scripted their own, you know, storylines, but none, you know, on a day like that where, let's face it, hockey day was a different day than we've been able to do in the past, where we tried to make the best of, you know, the difficult situations of not being able to travel our group the same way. So to do it in Scarborough and have all the stories before, have Michael on, have Wayne Simmonds on, and Stewart, and, you know, to have that happen on a night to get his first hat trick as a Maple Leaf, I think that's pure Canadiana, isn't it? And the way that you hope something like that can be drawn up. But you could tell he was into the game. You could tell the emotions of, you know, trying to spur his team back to a comeback. And I thought it was brilliant. And that's what's great about the game of hockey, when those kind of moments can happen.
The hometown bump you get on a day like that, where your hometown's being celebrated, if we take that thing to London, you have enough left in you to lace them back up?
Yeah, you know what? That would be a good feeling for sure. And I just think what it really shows is just how much, you know, the people in your life that got you into the NHL and got you to this moment, how much it means. And you know, even Michael, you think back to how many coaches you had, or how many times your mom or your dad took you to the rink or got you the early morning and did all the things to give you an opportunity to get where you are. And that's what I love about Hockey Day, all the different stories that are told about, you know, communities and about key people behind the scenes who make it possible for things like that to happen. And I just thought it was a great night all along, for sure.
So Bunting gets that hat trick, and it's a nice moment, and hat tricks are pretty rare, and it's a special day for him. But it's not out of the norm for the season he's putting together. This is a guy that has 27 points in 40 games. He's got 12 goals now. It looks like, hey, that shooting percentage isn't going to be Craig Simpson levels, but it's going to be pretty high. How big a steal does that look like on that contract right now, especially considering, you know, you let Hyman go, and he was part of that decision of how are you going to cobble together that role?
Yeah, there's a couple things that you say there. For sure, the productivity, I think, is one that you start to now get a real sense that, okay, he can definitely fill a Hyman role in terms of productivity, and you actually might have an upside even more so than that. What I like, though, is just the element that he brings to the game. I mean, he's another guy that, if you're looking at playoff style that you have to play, he's an aggressive player. He's not afraid to go in the corner. He draws penalties because of his aggressiveness. He checks hard. And I think what's grown, you know, you think of early in the season, he got his chance to play on that line, and maybe, you know, was a little too early. Maybe didn't have the confidence. You have to learn how to play with skilled players like Marner and Matthews, and went down to the third line, played a different role, got a little bit of energy and confidence from that. I think now what you see is, you know, good chemistry between he and Auston Matthews when they play together. They play off of each other well. I think you can tell that Auston likes playing with them. And that, to me, is, you know, maybe the biggest bonus is all of a sudden you've got a guy that definitely looks like he fills the Hyman role. But he also gives you a little bit, an element that you definitely didn't have at key times last year. So he looks to me like he fits a real piece of the puzzle. And I think as his confidence continues to grow, like you saw on Saturday night, I think the upside is rather large. I think he could be a, you know, a 30-plus goal scorer on a regular basis.
What do you make of those new lines? It's been, you know, kind of a dispersing of the talent, and we've seen it for two games here. Obviously, they had that one game where it's basically all power play goals, and then, you know, Saturday's game with the big comeback. Is that something you're going to see, you think, throughout the stretch here where they have a lot of games in February, or will it regress back to loading the top lineup?
I think Sheldon's going to try to. You look at last on Saturday night, and basically he kind of abandoned it when the team wasn't going well. It was an off night. I didn't think they had a good rhythm to their game. I don't think he did either. And so ultimately, I think you'll see a lot of what we did see on Saturday. When things aren't going well, you go back to it, you get yourself a little spark. For the players, it's like, okay, we're back together. Let's show them that we can be productive that way. But I do think it's an exercise for Sheldon that you have to go through during this kind of stretch in the season. I do think you have to get a feel of what could our lines look like. You know, you might get a matchup in the playoffs against an opponent that gives you troubles, that maybe has more depth. And so you do have to spread out your scoring a little bit, and you do have to try to create different matchups to try to get something going if the series isn't going well. So I don't think you need to make a huge deal of it. I think he will go back to experimenting a bit, but I think you'll see a lot of times where within the game he does what he did Saturday, and he goes back to what he knows can work to try to get a spark to get you back into the game.
And I think you can be encouraged by how some of these guys have looked bouncing around Kasha, Mikheyev, Kerfoot,
yep.
You know, fitting in wherever they're asked to fit in. And, you know, it makes as long as they're healthy, it makes the forward group look pretty stable for right now. You can't say that quite as much about the decor. And between now and the middle of March, when the trade deadline comes around, we're going to talk a yep. ton, I'm sure, about how the Leafs can address that weakness or that comparatively less deep blue line. Is there anyone that stands out to you as a natural fit for the Leafs between now and March, or a way to address that situation?
Yeah, you know, I don't think there's any question that if you're Kyle Dubas, you're looking at the team, especially during this stretch with Muzzin out, and say, okay, we are a very different looking team when you're missing number eight, when Hall was out as well. You know, it got guys like Liljegren and Sandin playing a lot more. I think Sandin's played three straight 20-plus minutes games, and he's had five of them all year. So definitely he's getting himself an opportunity to play a little more and try to prove that he can play in those key situations. But I think having Muzzin out, there's no question that you need to fill a gap so that you have some depth, you have maybe a little bit more of a bigger body. I know maybe it was just because we had played the Islanders the other day, but I know people were writing about Mayfield, maybe from the Islanders, a guy who can fit in. I don't think you want to, you know, the balance of trying to bring in a body is you'd like to have somebody who can play a regular defensive, you know, solid game each and every night. You don't want to have another guy in that you don't trust defensively, I think, anyways, because, you know, without question, Morgan Rielly, from an offensive standpoint, can bring a little bit. Sandin can play a couple little roles, but I don't think you want him higher up in the lineup. So I don't think there's any question that there's going to be another one and maybe even a second D that comes in close to the deadline that gives this group a little bit more balance and depth on the back end.
And speaking of the back end, the goaltending situation has been a little bit up and down over the last while with Campbell. I wouldn't say he's in a rough patch, but he's definitely not playing like his own over the last stretch. And then we have Mrazek getting a couple more opportunities. Are you surprised with how the Leafs are handling this goaltending tandem? And is it kind of giving Mrazek an opportunity to prove himself down the line?
Well, I just think the oddity of the season. I mean, the fact that you went so long without playing games, I think hindered Jack for sure, because you look at the way he was playing when the games were just coming along and every other night you're playing, you get into a good rhythm. I thought he was sharp. I thought he was on top. He was confident. And then all of a sudden you get, what, 2.5 weeks where you didn't even skate? I think the rhythm of the goaltenders really got off, and it became a challenge then for Sheldon to say, you know, Mrazek being out since October 30th and didn't play again until December 11th, you know, that's such a long way off and such an unknown about what kind of player is he? What kind of person is he? You haven't really had a chance to become a teammate. So I think it was important to try to get him in the mix a little bit. I didn't think he played all that well on Saturday, but when the game did turn, he turned as well, and that's all you're looking for. Can you battle? And can you endear yourself to your teammates? If teammates came back and he made a couple of big saves to keep the game tied before they were able to take it. So I think now that you get into the rhythm of some games in a row, this will be the second of 3 and 4 nights. I think you get Jack and hope to get Jack back in the rhythm of, you know, playing every second night and get yourself back some confidence. And now all of a sudden you have a tandem that's ready to play when the games come fast and furious like they're going to at the end of the season here.
It's kind of interesting though, right, Craig? They basically say this is Jack's net and Jack's going to run with it, and he gets all these extra starts, and we're looking at it more where the framework of the discussion around the goaltending is that it isn't a tandem and that it is going to be spots where Mrazek is looked at as though he is more of a traditional backup rather than a 1B, which we thought it kind of was going to be at the beginning of the year. And then, you know, Ailish brings up that there is that patch. Is there an added, I don't know, is there something that you're watching or looking for in addition to just his play in terms of how he is sort of responding to this? Because it does feel like a little bit of a challenge from your coach when he throws the other goalie in net for both the Saturday night, like both the Hockey Night in Canada games,
yeah.
Like shortly after telling everybody that you're the guy and that it's your net and we're running with you and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, you know, I think there are times where, you know, there might be a little bit of a motivation there. There are other times that it just simply does work out that way in terms of the timing. I think if that game on Saturday wasn't the Red Wings, maybe Mrazek wouldn't have got that, you know, just going against his old team. He had a chance to beat them last time, and that sometimes does come into play. But I think it's healthy. I think it's healthy in the sense that Jack's got to know that you're not ever going to be given anything. I think every athlete understands that, and I think Campbell would understand that even more so. And I think you do get the feeling that down when we're playing, what do they got, 41 games in the last, you know, 90 days or 88 days, you know you're going to need the two guys going well. So from Jack Campbell's focus, I'm sure it's, I got to get myself into a rhythm. The games are now coming fast and furious. All I got to worry about is my net when I have it. So I think it's interesting to have some discussion on it, but I don't think you're creating any kind of controversy. I think they've been respectful for Jack. They've, you know, been responsive to how well he's played, and it's going to be his net unless he struggles with it. And then you've got a guy who's ready to jump in when you need them.
So I need you to help me with something. I can't tell if since Marner's come back, he looks like a different guy, like maybe there's some weight off his shoulders right now, or if him being gone, I just needed to see him back to fully appreciate what the Leafs were missing when they didn't have him. Is it a little bit of both? Like, do you see a different Marner since he's come back?
Yeah, I think he's another guy that, you know, all of a sudden you get a frustrating injury from your own teammate that gets you out of the mix, and then you come back and you hadn't scored for a few games. I mean, he had gone 6 games without scoring, and then he comes back from his COVID, and now he's scored in 5 straight for the first time. So I think you're right that he kind of got out of the mix, and it's like anything. When you're not in the lineup, you sort of feel disconnected from the team, and I think at times you can forget what he does bring. What I've liked in his game since he's got back, he looks more like the guy that the puck follows around. You know, like when Mitch is playing at his best, I often said it looks like he's back in junior again. I mean, in junior, great players are the guys that the puck follows around. He always seems to have it on a stick. He can, you know, skate through guys and make plays. I think when he's playing his best, that's his confidence level. And right now, you know, the puck is following him around. He made just a great play on the third goal for Bunting. Stick handling through traffic, kept the play alive and made a perfect pass. And I think that's what you grow to expect to see at a number 16 when he's playing his best.
Craig Simpson, you're the best, man. Thanks so much for taking the time this morning.
All right. Thanks for having me on. Have a good day.
Craig Simpson, former forward, Stanley Cup champ, shooting percentage champ, and current Sportsnet color analyst. Leafs, Devils, 2 in a row. You guys happy with anything less than 4 points here?
Nope.
You know,
it's a bad team's process.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things we can see. I'd like to see two consistent games, like without, you know, these dramatic comebacks need to happen or dramatic collapses. Like, just play, you know, six periods of good hockey. Like, that would make me very happy.
Right now with the Leafs, process is everything to me. Results obviously get tied in with that, but I think about that Anaheim game, for example, where they end up having to go, they end up going to overtime. And you say, mm-hmm. Oh, well, why are you going over? The process was fine. And the result does end up with the 2 points. You end up getting the full points, but that's all I really look for with this team right now is process, process, process. And can they maintain this level of play? Because I've been pretty impressed with it so far. And yeah, there are nights where you see them play Detroit and they have a down night where they didn't play very well in that game, honestly. Like, bunting was a really positive story.
Mm-hmm.
So it ends up getting sort of spun as, wow, the Leafs bunting. And I get it, but they played like crap. And they were really sloppy. And I just don't want to see them have two games in a row like that. So how do you kind of reestablish yourself so that you stop avoiding or that you don't end up establishing bad patterns? So I guess if there's things that I care about process-wise tonight, it's play a stronger, tighter game than you did against Detroit because you got your off night essentially Saturday. And Jack Campbell, let's see how you play. Don't let in a bad early goal or two bad goals tonight because it's not been the most perfect. And I do, when I asked Craig that question for a reason, this is someone who has been questioned for the way that they handle the game from a mental standpoint, that he's too harsh on himself at times. And we've seen that a little bit recently. We've seen him really be down on himself. And there's a balance of being self-critical and being debilitating. And so for Jack, I am curious to see how he responds to some adversity, considering the fact that the vast majority of his Toronto Maple Leafs career, if not all of his Toronto Maple Leafs career, has been good. It has been very, very good. Like, he hasn't had a bad hiccup or a really bad moment since he's been here.
I think it's interesting as well what Craig said about just the back-to-back and the goaltending, not battling it out, but giving a little bit of pressure on Campbell. Maybe they play the same team back to back, so you can easily compare how the goaltending stacks up when you play exactly the same team one night after another. So I think we're going to get a good understanding of how different the goaltenders are, how different the team can play in front of the goaltending, which I think is a very interesting, you know, I've played long enough to know that sometimes if you feel less confident, you change your style. Maybe your defense is, you know, putting a little bit more pressure on themselves. Maybe the forwards are feeling like they need to be, you know, doing plays outside of their realm. So it'll be interesting to see back to back how the Leafs play in front of these two different goaltenders and how they stack up against the exact same team.
Ailish, we have an opportunity for a homer's parlay right now. Unfortunately,
plus 152.
Well, it depends what you do here, whether you go Leafs outright, Leafs minus 1.5, or Leafs in regulation. You can go a couple different ways with it there. Raptors at plus 100 right now, and that line's down to just 1 point dogs. I'm torn on the homer's parlay. I liked it. I thought it was such a fun thing at first. And now it's like we're in a stretch of four consecutive Leaf games that happen at the same time as the Raptors are playing, which means I get to, you know, we're all on PVR duty tonight. But Ailish, do you like the homer's parlay or is the Raptors too risky a spot?
No, I like it. I just saw that the Raptors line, actually money line, has moved to minus 105. So seems like people are feeling a little bit more confident about the Raptors. Weren't they plus money before? Or?
Yeah, they were.
Do you have it when you refresh it? Yeah, so I think I'll do it. You know, I've been a fan of the homers parlay. I don't feel as confident as I have in the past, but I feel very confident in the Leafs. And you know what? If the Hawks, as JD said, might be frauds or they're not as good as their you know, results over the last little while has felt, I feel like the Raptors are going to put on a big night. They got two people fighting for the All-Star game, you know. Big narrative game, so I'm gonna do it.
It's a good test for them. As I'll lay out on the pregame broadcast, the Hawks are red hot, 7 in a row. Mm-hmm. A lot of Trae Young pick and roll, a step forward for their defense, but weaknesses with turnovers, weaknesses with rebounding. As JD laid out earlier in the prop game, If there's somewhere you can make hay against the Hawks, it's on the glass. That game, by the way, is at 7:30 on
tough.
7:30 on Sportsnet, mm-hmm. Raps Hawks, and 7:30 on Sportsnet Leafs Devils. So
both of them at the same time.
Do your Sportsnet juggling.
Stagger them. Come on.
Yeah, just yeah. Get the PVR fired up. JD, sorry, you were going to say something there, and
I just think the Raptors are a tough team, and the Hawks are soft, and so this is a night where I'll be pretty disappointed if the Raptors don't have a tough effort, but it'll get undercut with they played all those minutes the night before, so that's mm-hmm. one thing. But yeah, this is the type of team that I expect. Like, I feel like the Raptors are built to beat a team like this. That this is a team where you go, they got one superstar player that I want to expect you to be able to kind of take out of the game with multiple defensive options, that you're going to beat them on the glass, you're going to out-tough them, you're going to be able to get to the rim against this team, right? Like, you should be able to get easy buckets, easy baskets. The way that the Raptors are built should match up well against the Hawks, in my opinion. So it would be a disappointing one if they lose this game. Like, to Blake's point earlier about this one being a good measuring stick game, I do think that it's a philosophically good measuring stick game of where you're at with your team construct. So go get one tonight, Raps. And yes, Leafs, beat the brakes off of a crappy Devils team. How about that? That would be nice. So yes, good homers parlay night. I still probably won't play it, though. I still probably won't do it.
That's a Toronto sports fan right there. You know what? Everything lines up to be pretty good, but I just can't trust it. Some shul drip. Too much went well this past weekend, right? Raptors triple overtime win. Leafs do the Keefe quote of, it wasn't a good game, but it was a good win. Canada soccer wins. We get two exciting football games. JD, I get it. You're waiting for the other shoe to drop. But who knows? Maybe we'll keep the good times rolling. We'll keep the wake and rake success rolling. We'll keep the homers parlay success rolling. We'll do all that. And we'll talk to you tomorrow morning on the Fan Morning Show. Make sure you subscribe, rate, review, all that good stuff. The Fan Morning Show, wherever you get your podcasts. Follow at Ailish4far, at JD Bunkus, and I'm Blake Murphy. We'll talk to you guys tomorrow. Have a wonderful Monday. Fan Morning Show, Sports at 590, The Fan.